Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Balvard Radio. And tonight, I'll soon be joined by the biggest, fattest, and youngest one of them all. For tonight's show, what we'll do is review the general manager candidates for the Texans GM position that's been open ever since Rick Smith took a leave of absence for at least this year. And, you know, I still fully don't understand it. We'll talk about that discussion, who the candidates are, and what is kind of going on with their ability to interview people and not interview people. Then after that, we'll discuss the 2017 wildcard round in the NFL playoffs. All those games were really spectacular. I had a blast, you know, all weekend just hanging out and watching all four of those games. I'm going to pretty much do that in chronological order as well, too. So if you hold on tight, BFD will be here in just a second. Hey.
Hey, my bad. Kids,
it's all right.
Melting down, fighting. I just, timing was terrible. Sorry.
It's okay. Can you hear me all right?
No, but let's go.
Can you hear me okay?
I can. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Let's be quiet for 3 seconds. I'll hit the song. We'll get on with the show, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Balvard Radio. My name is Matt Weston. Tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, and drunkest one of them all, BFD. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, and let's add Rampage just to that, too, with my kids driving me crazy.
Yeah, I guess you're a little late to get a vasectomy, vasectosection, you know?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, man.
I thought that's what a vasectomy was, is whenever you take your child and shove it back down your urethra to get rid of it. Is that how it works?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what they showed us when I had the vasectomy done. That was the video they showed.
Yeah, well, it's never too late. So did you know that the NFL season is actually very good?
And by the way, if anybody out there Googles my name, Big Fat Drunk, and vasectomy, there was a great story of when I got mine. You're welcome, everybody. It's true. It's on newsvine.com. Seriously.
All right, I'll have to check it out.
All right. Yeah, it's really great. It's peak BFD. It really is. So your question was, did I know that football? Football's really fun. The game last night was really fun. It was a great football, playoff football weekend. Football's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you really kind of lose sight of that, too, whenever, one, you watch a bad team, and, you know, the NFL season is, like Leonard Fournette has realized, it can be kind of a slog. You know, 16 weeks is a lot of game to play. You know, such a high-contact collision sport. And additionally, like, the first 4 weeks of the NFL season are really bad because of the limited amount of practices that teams have. And so, yeah, 4 weeks don't really count where teams are kind of sleepwalking. They figure out everything, what they like to do, how they play with their teammates, what they're good at. And so you have kind of like a whole month that doesn't matter, and then you kind of roll on, you know, becomes good in October, November, December. But as you know, this is a Houston Texans website. If you're listening to this, you're probably a Houston Texans fan. And this year is really bad, and so you kind of lose sight that, you know, football is a very fun sport. We watch the game because it's fun and entertaining. And this is why we watch it, because of, you know, weekends like this past one. And it was great to finally have like a really great wild card round, because last year it was bad. Remembering those games last year?
I really don't, because one of your comments was something that I affected, and I was like, yeah, I really don't, yeah. I don't remember that. Anyway.
Yeah, I worked my way backwards to get to the, to like figure out who played last year and sort of. So what we're going to do for tonight's show is we're going to discuss the Texans GM candidate search. And then from there, we'll review these playoff games. And then we'll do a quick preview. I don't want to, you know, it's early in the week. I haven't done enough research. I'm sure, you know, BFD hasn't as well, too. But we'll kind of give our preliminary picks for now. And what we're kind of, you know, excited, I guess, start looking at whenever those games could go on this weekend as a plan for the show. So, you know, right now, we don't have a general manager. They start interviews. They are starting interviews this week. Ray III and Brian Gaynor are the favorites for the position. Ray III was president of football operations / assistant general manager for Houston this year. And every kind of report kind of that he did a lot of the work while Rick Smith was, you know, dealing with his own personal life during the season. And Brian Gaynor used to be the director of player personnel in Houston before he went to Buffalo to become the assistant general manager there. In addition to this, the Texans are blocking interviewing members of the Eagles and Patriots organization because their employers didn't let them. And whenever you're a team in the playoffs, you can, you know, block interviews during this time of year. And the Texans also took Brian Gutekunst out to dinner, Bill O'Brien specifically, but he was hired to be the Packers general manager at 2 o'clock in the morning that night. So that's kind of the summary of what's going on here. They're going to start interviews. Some of the guys they want to interview, they can't. And they're going to interview two guys already linked to the Texans organization. So, BFD, you and the Texans should make a decision soon, or should they wait for some of these teams to get knocked out of the playoffs, review all the candidates that they're interested in, or should they, you know, go ahead and find the prettiest girl that they, you know, see immediately, and so that way they won't be, you know, left all alone as a result?
Well, it's with the – I think Brian Gaynor, I think if he wouldn't have gone – or his most likely – destination, I think, would have been the Giants, but, you know, of course, Gettleman went there. excuse me. Great, now my throat's hurting. That's awesome. Not from yelling at kids, by the way, for the record. But if these are our two choices right now, Jimmy Ray III and Brian Gaynor, if these are our two current choices, these two guys had a very heavy hand, both of them, in the current roster makeup. And I want to wait until the playoffs are over. I can't see where you look at either of those guys and really say, hey, look at the teams they've worked with. Look at the great job they've done. I mean, can you say that about either guy? And if you're going to make your decision points on about, you know, hiring this person, I'd at least want a guy who has something to show for it. But if you're going to say, yeah, I have been the, you know, vice president of football operations and AGM for the past, was it 3 years, I think, or for the past year. And you look at the Texans roster and go, no. And especially in the instance of Brian Gaynor. I mean, I was really hoping that Brian Gaynor would go to the Giants and that Bill O'Brien would follow him. That way we get rid of two guys who don't do their jobs well. So mm-hmm. I'm not excited about either of these guys. To me, both of these guys are just Rick Smith without the 10-year track record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we talked about last week, too, with Brian Gaynor, where he was the director of pro player personnel. He had a big influence on signing Lamar Miller, Brock Osweiler, Lamar Allen. We all know how, and Lamar Allen, Jeff Allen, and we all know how that went. The other interesting thing, though, if they do go with, like, Ray III or Brian Gaynor, I think because of where they've been in the organization before, I think that kind of opens the door for Rick Smith to come back as well if the Texans have, you know, let's say a bad 2018 season and they could fire Bill O'Brien, bring in Rick Smith, and hire another GM, and he'd be back maybe in 2019 even. And that's kind of a weird thought as well. And so, like, I know that these candidates have been blocked, but there's been some rumors circulating that, you know, maybe they're not even being blocked necessarily, but that your general manager candidates don't really want to go to Houston because Rick Smith is still kind of sort of there, like his ghost is overhanging everything. So do you think that and the Texans are having a head coach is going to hurt their chances to get the guy that they really want?
Well, we don't know who they really want. I mean, I think you make the great point is that with this weird Rick Smith in kind of weird purgatory for 2018, I mean, if you hire Brian Gaynor and you hire Jimmy Ray III, I mean, are you kind of just giving the message that, hey, this is really Rick Smith's job when he comes back? And if you're not one of those two guys and you see what's going on, are you confused? It's like, hey, am I just in this for 1 year or am I going to be reporting to Rick Smith next year? There's so much confusion, I think, that I think when you say the guy we want, like, I don't know if there's a guy we want if it's going to be kind of an unrequited love, if it's somebody outside of that organization, outside of being Jimmy Ray III or Brian Gaynor. Mm-hmm. I have to say, if they were to ask me to take that position and I'm an aspiring GM and I want to GM my own team and I'm looking at what the Texans situation is, I'm going to probably pass. So I think no matter what, we're going to wind up with one of those two guys, because I don't think anybody else is going to come work for us, because, you know, you've got the ghost of Rick Smith hovering over the organization and the player personnel aspects.
Yeah, interesting. I think it's a better job than you think it than you're saying it is, just because you potentially have a franchise quarterback in Watson, which is the hardest thing to pin down. That's why Colt's job, was really good last year, and also going to be a good job to end the summer as well too. And whenever you have that quarterback position, pinned down, everything else is easier. And you also have a lot of talent around you, since the bowl, a lot of free agent cap space, and we've talked a lot about the fact that line, fix the offensive line and the secondary in the offseason, which is very difficult to do. But the way the roster is constructed, those positions aren't as important, depending on how I stay healthy or not. So I do think it's still a good job, but it's a very strange job. Like, it's a point to come into with Rick Smith, being there on the outside, he could be your boss the year after in your old position. And also the fact that you have Bill O'Brien, who has 1 year left on his contract, and you're having to deal with a head coach that one has fought with the GM for the past 3 or 4 years. Nobody knows, has any idea who made which decision or that or which one or the other, because they both, gossip about each other behind each other's backs to, unknown sources. And so you're having to work with a guy who's already has a track record of being, hard to work with when it comes to general manager specifically. So I don't know. I mean, I'd say a talent level, it's a good job, but everything extra, the subjective parts of it, it's kind of a murky and a strange one as well.
Yeah, and then you look at one more aspect to it, and that's Bob McNair's comments earlier this year, the inmates running the asylum. That's not going to sit well with a lot of head coaches, because that's one more aspect. They don't want to have to deal with an owner who's going to say stupid stuff like that. And yes, you can give it all the excuses you want. That's just the saying. It's not, not really what was in his heart. Look, this is still... If Bob McNair has a history of discriminatory actions, whether that was the LGBT campaign in Houston a couple years ago, the Hope campaign, he has a history of it. Okay, you can't get around that. So a lot of head coaches are going to look at that and go, "Nah, I don't want to deal." So you've added a lot of levels of complications. Much fun as it would be to come in and work with Deshaun Watson and Clowney and build up a team around those guys, you still look at all the side stuff and say, but all this other stuff, man, I don't want to deal with this junk. And it's all junk. It's all trash. So I don't know. I kind of look at it like, I think we're going to wind up with Ray or Gain just by default. I just do. I don't know.
And adding on what you're saying too, this is a team that doesn't have their first two draft picks. And I just want to say again, I don't think this has ever been said enough. The Brock Osweiler trade was really bad, and if you don't think it is, you should look outside the fandom and look at the extra layers of it and what they accomplished with the free agency money that they got out of it, because it's a bad trade, with how everything kind of worked down the full, circle of it. And you're talking about a Texans team that's having to build this team through free agency this year. And so if you're a free agent and you're African-American, do you want to go play for Bob McNair based on his comments, based on his track record? I know that you have guys there who, like Clowney and McKinney and Merciless and stuff, who haven't said anything at all, really. Clowney wore the jumpsuit as a joke on Halloween, but I don't think it's shown that it's going to have any effect at all on his contract extension, for example. But still, if that's your heritage, you're going to come in this situation, is that really what you want to get to? Do you want to play for a team with an owner like that? And it could also influence, maybe they have to pay more money to get guys in, or guys are just going to go to different teams because they don't want to play for Houston. And that's a legitimate possibility as well. And it's going to be interesting how that shakes out in March too.
Yeah, and there will be an impact from that. There will. I just really don't have any doubt that players want to – look, players understand a couple things about the game. They understand they've got short lifespans as football players. They understand that they need to max out. They saw what happened to Dwayne Brown, that he was basically traded, for wanting a raise. And players are going to see this. This does not exist in a vacuum. So if I have to say, once again, if I were a player and I'm looking at my choices, if I'm a general manager wannabe and I'm looking at my choices, the Houston Texans would not be at the top of that list.
Yeah. So who do you think that they end up with? Do you think they end up with Raynard or Brian Gain? And which one do you want?
I think we have
a preference of the two.
I don't want either, and I think we wind up with Brian Gain. I think Brian Gain is, in a lot of ways, he's kind of the most transitional. He has a history with Bill O'Brien. A deeper history, I guess, would be more fair to say, than does Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of these guys really shows me that they're anything more than just Rick Smiths. And that's not what we need. We don't need another general manager with 3 playoff wins over 10 years. We need somebody who, and we don't know, they might be capable of it. Let's be honest. We're all talking out of our butts here. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what they really think. We don't know where Rick Smith might have overruled one of the decisions. There's a lot of unknowns here. Let's be very, very honest about this. So They might be really awesome, but from looking at what we can see, what we have knowledge of today, neither of these guys excites me. I want the Eagles, dude.
Yeah, I don't know anything at all about any of these guys. I have no preference either way, but just the way it's kind of breaking, I think the Tech want to get a GM sooner than later, especially since Bill O'Brien's head coach and he's going to be here this year. And I know he wants to get started on player evaluations and rookie scouting and that. And based off the history he's had with these two guys, I think it's really going to come down to whichever one O'Brien likes the most. And I also watched a video that John McClain had. I know you've had jokes on in the past, but he said that once the Texans sign their general manager, it's very likely that the Texans extend Bill O'Brien after that. Do you see any truth at all to what McClain was saying in that video?
Yeah, believe it or not, I agree 100% with that, because I don't think you go into 2018 with Bill O'Brien on a one-year contract. If you have to make a change at the end of 2018, you're just going to eat that contract. That's all there is to it. So you have to give your players a sense of confidence that their leadership is going to be there at the end of the season, that there's no kind of gray area there. So I can't imagine that he's not extended once we have a new GM signed.
I hope they don't, just because I think O'Brien hasn't done enough to show he's a good head coach. Again, like a lot of stuff we've talked about a lot, but I think he needs to be on like a one-year prove-it deal and just see how this upcoming season goes before you accept anything any longer at all whatsoever. And he said he wants to stay in Houston with the Coach Watson. And I think you have to kind of see what he does this year. But I think it's probably expected that's what's going to happen. They'll probably end up signing Brian Gain as their head coach, and then as their general manager, they're extending Bill O'Brien. And then it's a possibility that even after that, if next year doesn't go well, both guys get fired. We can see Rick Smith as a GM and 19 and make another head coach after that. So it's weird. It's such a weird situation. I don't really understand it. It's kind of like a – I guess I'll leave this metaphor at the door. It's a weird situation, though.
Yeah, I don't. It's one of those things that if you kind of collected what's wrong, what could be like the most worst things going on when you're trying to hire a GM. You have all the background with the team. You have the background of the owner. You have a roster that's fairly bereft of talent outside of the top tier. You don't have this first or second round draft pick. And then you've got the ghost of the former GM who's kind of hovering, rattling his chains in the attic. He's going to come back in 2019 when Tiffany hopefully is all well and good. So there's a lot not to like if you're interviewing for this job. Because here's the fact, we don't know how Rick Smith returns. We do know that Rick Smith will return, but in what role does he return? Is this a one-year gig? I just don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could you be living out of a hotel here or – renting an apartment for a year as you wait and kind of see what happens. I mean, the whole thing is very strange. The other Texans that came out was that DeAndre Hopkins isn't going to participate in the Pro Bowl. I guess he hurt the Steelers, and I thought he sat week 17 just because the game didn't matter and why get him hurt during the offseason. Like how Will Fuller got hurt in that game, and we still haven't heard anything at all about the prognosis on that injury either. So are you sad you're not going to watch in a game that you're probably not going to watch anyways?
Oh, I haven't watched the Pro Bowl in, I don't even remember how long, probably since I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's one of those games that you get excited for when you're 10 years old or 11 years old, and then you watch it and you're like, they're not hitting each other. They're just standing there. The only good thing I liked about the Pro Bowl was when every player would wear the helmet of the team So you just have those just grandiose big old blue and red jerseys, but then you have 11 different helmets on the field, and I always love that part of it.
Okay, I admit that is pretty cool. I also like it when they trade decals, which doesn't. I don't know if that happens anymore. It used to happen every once in a while, but I used to think that was cool. But yeah, they need to do something. The Pro Bowl just is not really enjoyable. The beach football didn't work out well. There's got to be some way to kind of spotlight these guys. Let them. But back in the 70s, they used to have, like, I don't remember what it was called, but the Wide World of Sports. They used to have, like, these contests. There'd be swimming and sprinting and all sorts of, like, athletic feats, and teams would compete against each other. Let's bring something like that back. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, they do something like that. I know they did it last year. They're kind of doing this year. They're playing, like, tug-of-war, and they have, like, a skills battle, a quarterback accuracy competition, which is good. You know, they should do it. It's more fun whenever they have those sorts of things, kind of make it an awesome weekend. But, you know, football in itself is inherently, it's a violent game. And when you remove the violence and collisions, it's not, you know, really the same game at all anymore. It's just kind of like it's the last pickup basketball game of the night, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't get any thrill from it. Let's pass.
Yeah. So, last off, it's playoff time. Last week we made our picks. I went to see in Buffalo. You went 1-3 picking the Panthers over the Saints. And again, let me remind you, we were doing this with the spread. So is this one of the best wild card rounds that you can remember?
It was a really, really interesting wild card round, right? You know, you had the 10-3 Jacksonville game. You had the QB shootout in the other game. You had the Rams kind of, you know, taking a giant dump in the middle of the field in their game. It was a really kind of erratic weekend, but a very fun weekend. I don't know if that's really the best I've seen, because there have been a couple that have been really, really good, but it was a very entertaining weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's one of the things where, I wrote about this weekend. I was like, you know, I'll never forget this weekend. I won't forget these games. Wow, what a great collection of games. But then next year's going to come along, and I'm not going to remember any of them. So, you know, as soon as the next year happens, you're just flush your brain, because there's only so much stuff. I really enjoyed it. I had a great weekend watching all four of these games. It was a blast. Which game was your favorite?
Probably the Saints-Panthers game, just because that one should have not been as close, and it was really neat kind of watching the Panthers stick around. I think going into it, it would have been the Rams-Falcons game was the one I was looking forward to the most, but that turned out the Rams just looked awful. I got to go with the Panthers and Saints. Watching Drew Brees is just a thrill. He's just a fun guy to watch. And Alvin Kamara is just a fantastic football player. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was my favorite one, too. Yep. And it was mainly because of that quarterback duel between Drew Brees and Cam Newton was just spectacular. So the review of these games will go in chronological order. The first game of Saturday afternoon was the Chiefs and Titans. And I think really the biggest thing about this game was the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs lost Travis Kelce. If you forgot, he caught a drag route in the middle of the field, broke one tackle, and lowered his head really low into the second one, and collided with Jonathan Cyprien and got hit right in the head and fell down, was woozy getting up, missed him in the locker room. He didn't play another snap. And then after that, Titans were able to, cover the Chiefs wide receivers. The Chiefs really struggled to move the football. The Titans had no answer for Kelce, too, up to that entire point. And so that really changed the dynamic of that game. Do you agree with that? How much of an impact did you see that Kelce injury had on this one?
I think that had a significant – I think that was the difference in the game. I think Kelce in the game, the Chiefs win. His replacement came in, Demetrius Harris, and he wound up dropping at least one pass. I can remember off the top of my head, but I think it was two, mm-hmm. and both of them were easy catches. Kelce doesn't drop those. Kelce is just such a threat after the play. And really, when you look at the type of quarterback that Alex Smith is when he was successful this year, he was pushing the ball down the field, he was making plays. When they went into the slump, kind of mid-season, mid to late season, is because he went back to being Alex Smith. He quit pushing the ball, stretching it with Tyreek Hill especially. But he's got they've got so much speed at the wide receiver position. I mean, how do you not get excited about Albert Wilson's also a burner. DeMarcus Robinson's a burner. So Alex Smith reverted to Alex Smith in this game, and when he lost Travis Kelce, the only one of the really best weapons he's got in the middle of the field where he's going to be successful, I think Alex Smith just kind of short-circuited, and that was it.
Yeah, it was weird, too, because Alex Smith led the NFL yards per attempt on throws greater than 15 yards in the field, 19.36. And he was, like, the best downfield thrower in football this year, and you really – people forget about that. And so in this game, Kelce, no matter who they had on, they played zone coverage. He was fitting in the holes really well. They put They put Williamson on him. They couldn't cover him. They were playing Bayard, a deep premier throughout the entire game in case, you know, Hill broke anything at all. And they were afraid to play with – they were afraid to double him and give Hill more space downfield. But, yeah, it is weird, though, too, because, like, it did change the entire game. But you would think that the Chiefs wouldn't fail to score, you know, touch on the second half because of that. Because the Titans were the worst football team at covering short passes, and you know, the Chiefs are in the past, you know, historically they've been a good quick throwing team, and it really didn't work out well when they were trying to do their quick passes and their screens and their cute plays. The Titans did a really good job, you know, kind of slowing those plays up. But you know, you kind of really like how that dynamic changed. And then the Chiefs were kind of reverting to this other way they used to play, which kind of is a perfect way to attack Titans. They just didn't work out whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree. And it's give credit to the BSFs where it's due. Is you had great games from Williamson. I mean, relatively. Okay, let's just be really upfront and honest. Still a lot of trash out there. Adoree Jackson. You got enough play from those guys that they did not sploosh themselves. And sometimes that's, you know, you have to give the credit where it's due on those kind of games. Hey, no, they weren't great. They weren't fantastic. But, man, they didn't shit themselves. They didn't crap themselves out on the field. So, winning.
And one of the interesting things I saw, too, was they play a lot of man coverage to start this game. You mentioned it last week about Adoree Jackson covering Tyreek Hill. I wrote about last night. But they did that, and Adoree Jackson was absolutely on like the first five targets that he had in that game.
They changed the
coverage entirely. They went more zone. They played off of Hill. They said, you know, Smith doesn't have the best arm. And so if he's throwing the ball out wide outside the numbers, you have the chance to get down that tackle. And if you make those tackles, you know, it really neutralizes Hill. And if you just try to go deep, you can cover those deep passes. And they did a good job making that adjustment. And I really think that defensive adjustment and the Kelce injury, you know, turn this game around defensively for the Titans, because again, they gave up 21 points in that first half, and Alex Smith he had two touchdown drives on his first three possessions. Yeah, football is really constantly evolving.
I'm sorry about that. Didn't it seem like Adoree Jackson too, after that last one, was just completely demoralized as a football player?
Mm-hmm.
Like that third or fourth reception
he was just riding alongside of him. Yeah. It was just sad. Wow. He was awful in that game. He ended up making like a tackle on Hill later on, but he stood no chance against him one versus one. And you know, it's like, you know, one put a fast guy on a fast guy. I think, yeah, that should work out. But there's a difference between, you know, you have some technical skill, and he was trying to jam Hill at the line. It didn't work out, you know, at all whatsoever. The other thing I liked about the Titans in this game was they really stuck to their run game. Even though they went down, you know, 21-3, they still kept running the ball and playing long and, you know, attacking a really bad Chiefs run defense. So what do you think about Derrick Henry? Good, bad? What are your thoughts on him?
Derrick Henry, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Well, he really kind of had the play of the game, right? When he broke off the touchdown run, got him within 21-16, that 35-yard, like, relatively easy jaunt. He's a really odd guy to watch because he's so big, but he's so fast. He has no like lateral quickness at all, but somehow he can still do a little bit. He's just a really odd combination of speed and size and just pure unadulterated terror running down the field.
Yeah, I've never seen a running back like him before because he's 6'4", 240 pounds. My friend was telling me that when he went to Alabama, he was a linebacker. Everybody throughout then, you know, the D1 programs want him to play linebacker, defensive end, and Alabama want to keep you at running back. And they did that. He's 6'4", you know, 230. And he is a bad in between the tackles runner, though. Like, if you look at his yards for carry distribution this year, he averaged, this is off the top of my head, but I think he averaged 2.96 yards to carry middle, but he averaged 10.36 yards per carry on the left edge. So he loves to do is like run halfway up the middle, stop, plant, and then run all around to the outside on the left. And it works out against bad run defense in Kansas City. It doesn't against really fast defenses like Jacksonville. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's kind of one of those things with a quarterback who improvises a lot at it. It's like, how much do you want to reel him back and, you know, play within the game? You want them to you, but I've never seen a guy with his size just be so bad run the ball for tackles, but be able to break things outside in such a weird way where he'll just, again, plant relaxedly behind the scrimmage all the way around the edge. And also helps that, you know, Taylor Lewan's been, you know, here and had a great game against Kansas City.
Yeah, and didn't he have his 35-yard touchdown? That was one of those kind of bounce outs on the left side, if I remember correctly, which I may not,
now
but it was left side.
He ran middle, and he had a huge. He had 7 yards, like, total to run through from one into the other.
God,
and he cut it to the left at the end past Ron Parker.
After when he got to the second level. Yeah, almost the third level at that point. Yeah, that's right. That's when the whole offensive line opened up, or the Kansas City Chiefs line opened up like the Red Sea. That's right.
Yeah, it was unbelievable just how big that hole was. And it was a pretty cool, you know, power play, too, that they just got some really great double teams. And the Chiefs have a really bad run defense. Like, you know, we talked about last week where I thought this game would be at least close. I wasn't expecting Tennessee to win, but I thought it'd be at least close. But that wasn't even the play of the game, though, BFD. You forgot that Marcus Mariota has self-strike touchdown. And the self-strike touchdown is whenever you throw the ball, the defender bats or somebody bats it, and then you catch it, and then you run it into score as a fact. Have you ever seen that before?
I know I have. I know I have somewhere, but I don't know if it was for a touchdown. I mean, I've seen quarterbacks do it. I can't place for sure when I saw for a touchdown. I sure as hell can't remember one that happened during a playoff game.
I know John Gruden showed it on his iPhone that Brad Johnson did it whenever he was in Minnesota, and that was the best part of that telecast because, you know, John Gruden's really bad in the booth. But, yeah, I've never seen the self-psych touchdown. And it was just one of the most spectacular. And my favorite part about it was Daniel Sorensen shoves Mariota, the ball's been tipped, and he shoves him towards the football, of course, and Mariota makes a really pylon dive to score as well.
Daniel Sorensen's got to be he's like the – who am I looking for? Oh, my God. The ex-Texan – hurt himself on the motorcycle. Oh, my gosh. That's where your mind goes.
Shallow Kale?
Matt Stevens. Matt Stevens. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah. He's like the Matt Stevens of 2017 football.
Yeah. Well, I think Frank Sambo is the worst player on that defense. And he was a guy who was infamously blocked by Mariota. But all game, like, he stood no chance against the lawn. He had no speed. He couldn't tackle Derrick Henry. He offers nothing as a pass rusher. And then Tyler, you know, Chiefs. You know, front seven, like Chris Jones is spectacular, but he got hurt in this game. But Derek Johnson's 35 years old. He's too old. Reggie Ragland is a good tackler, but he's not a good linebacker. And Kansas City Chiefs fans love him, say he's good, but he's not that good of a football player. But, you know, again, he can tackle pretty well. Houston's not that good of a run defender. Tom Bali's done. They have some big eyes, you know, on their defensive line. You know, Alan Bailey's really dropped off, which is surprising. Dee Ford hasn't entirely lived to expectations, but I think some of that's having to do with injury too. But they were 32nd in run defense DVOA, and they have to do a lot this year to improve that run defense. So whatever they end up doing, you know, just doesn't work. My last question for you about this game is, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, you know, fortunately for the Kansas City Chiefs, they have Derek Johnson on the roster. Derek Johnson from the University of Texas at Austin.
Yeah. And it's too, because he was great 2 years ago, and then he tore his Achilles. Since his last Achilles tear, he's been just a bad player. He's smart, you know, he's intelligent, but he murdered Mariota in this game, that free rush, but he's just not good anymore. My last question for you about this game, too, is are you happy that the Titans won this game? Because, you know, I know on one hand the Titans won, that makes you sad. But on the other hand, the Titans won, and Mike Mularkey's going to stay for another year as the head coach.
Yeah, and that's the best news out of this, is that Mike Mularkey is just such a terrible head coach. And we kind of joked about this in the past. This basically cemented Mike. I mean, how do you say Malarkey doesn't coach the team next year?
He's going to at this point.
So we kept a really, really poor head coach in the AFC South. So that's kind of winning. And the other funny thing is we are not quite going to segue to that game yet. But, you know, Blake Bortles was so bad during his game. I mean, he wasn't even game manager quality. You got to think the Jacksonville Jaguars are kind of looking at this game going, yeah, you know, maybe Blake Bortles isn't really the answer. Let's go get us a quarterback in 2018. So we had a little bit of winning over the weekend as a Texans fan and a little bit of losing as a Texans fan.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing's be interesting, too. We'll talk about that in a second. It is weird. I like the meth mouth thing. Like, I like the way the offense works, but then you have to be able to balance a common passing attack off. It came to your opponent, and they haven't done that at all. And, you know, they're going to lose, like, 9-0 this weekend. The night game was Rams-Falcons, and I know you touched on briefly, so the Rams were just, you know, bad, and they came out to play this game. But I firmly believe that this would have been a really great football game. Like, it got close a few times, but they were never able to actually do it. But if Farrell Cooper doesn't have those two special teams turnovers and give the Falcons two red zone possessions, and if the Rams don't lose two possessions that game, I think it would have been a really good game. Also, I think the Rams are the better team. They would have ended up winning too. But I think those two, you know, turnovers just really killed them.
I don't think you're wrong at all. I mean, not at all. Turnovers kill. Thank you, Jacoby Jones. You know, you proved that to be very, very true. But they, what the Falcons really seem to concentrate on, and this is my takeaway, and I haven't actually bounced this off of anybody yet, but they really seem to focus on taking away that outstanding screen game. And you've talked about it often, that they're the best screen passing team in the NFL. They really seem to focus on the Falcons seem to focus on taking away that screen game. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. And they play a lot of zone coverage. They have a really fast defense, and those two things usually lend to the ability to miss the screen game. And I know, like, just watching it, they made a lot of really great tackles where Gurley had 4 catches on 10 targets for 10 yards. His longest reception went to 4 yards. He had 737 yards receiving this year with all running backs in football. And I think part of it also is the field, too, where you plant a turn and he would slip. He slipped into some tackles. But they were on him immediately after pass attempts. And that was kind of the staple of the Rams' offense this year. The staple of the Rams' passing offense this year was the screen game. And the Falcons did a pretty job to take those plays away.
Yep.
So I know the – very good. Great job. That's why I'm a professional. The Falcons defense did a great game, had a great game. And you think they're breaking out for the playoffs, or was this just a good matchup for Atlanta and one good game?
I think they were able to beat the Rams at their own game. And this isn't a bad team. I mean, the Falcons, they were not, especially defensively, they were not where they need to be. And, of course, you had to expect a major pullback after losing Shanahan as the offensive coordinator. And I see that as one of your questions. I'm not going to plot spoil that. But they're not as good as they were in 2016, that's for sure. But they were really able to focus on keeping Gurley in check, you know, in the passing game. They got lucky with the Farrell Cooper turnovers. You know, sometimes things just go that way. I do agree with you that the Rams are the better team, but sometimes you just get lucky, and that's why we play the game and other neat little colloquialisms.
Yeah, the Rams are young and inexperienced. I heard that all weekend from a friend of mine. I'm still tired of hearing it.
Every Los Angeles Ram is a toddler, evidently. That was what my takeaway.
They've never played the game before at all. And it was also just such a weird game, too, because, like, watching it, you know, they go half down by 10. You know, like, you know, this is as bad as it can go, but still as good as it can go in all ways because they're still in this game and they lost 2 possessions like they did. And then the game, I was waiting for Matt Ryan to turn the ball over. Like, I was waiting for a really stupid throw, a really big interception to happen. and I'm still waiting for it to happen. And I don't think it's going to happen, BFT. And I know Steve Sarkisian took a lot of heat this year. They said he was terrible. He's awful. He's horrendous. He was just, you know, spectacularly bad at the offensive coordinator position. But I thought he did a really good job in this one. How'd you like the Falcons' offensive game plan?
I don't know. It was fine. You know, I saw that question. He was fine. But to me, there's a difference between fine, and we look at what Kyle Shanahan did during the playoffs last year, and you see how they're just explosive they were. And this is basically the same unit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and Matt Ryan, you know, look how he kind of regressed. So he was fine. He doesn't get me excited. He's fine.
Mm-hmm. See, I like what they did because they were, you know, going into Rams defense, and, you know, Wade Phillips always has a great pass defense, but his run defense isn't that great. And the Rams, you know, really took it to them. They ran a lot outside. They ran outside zone to the left. They ran outside zone to the right. And they didn't break any big runs at all, but they kept getting, you know, 5 yards, 6 yards, 3 yards, you know, 7 yards. They had a lot of successful plays, and they kept that Rams offense off the field for the majority of the game just by slowly churning it, you know, turn the ball down the field like they did. And the one thing that really impressed me about Sarkisian is that I think over the course of the game, he's not that great, and the Rams are limited and they stutter up. But he makes some really great plays. That Sanu screen was really awesome, where you have everybody running slants to the opposite side of the field. Julio Jones is running that attention over there. And then they hit Sanu going back the other way that he took for, you know, 60 yards. And then also that touchdown throw that Ryan had to Jones. They have Jones lined up on the left side of the formation. They fake the outside zone left. Jones sprints behind the line of scrimmage and just runs to the pylon. The defensive back covering him, number 43, Jones, he takes one step to the right. And after that, you know, he cannot catch up to Jones. And he's wide open. And there, Ryan threw like a really lovely, just like high lofting pass to him for the score. And I saw that a lot with Sarkisian this year too. Like the Rams would have turnovers. They would make mistakes in offense, but they were still able to craft some really beautiful plays. And I know Sarkisian's up there with his hat on backwards and he's took a lot of flack, but I really liked what he did this game. I think he did exactly what needed to be done for the way the game flowed and also for the best way to attack the Rams defense too.
Yeah, I think I agree there were some good plays. When you look at, you know, the Falcons averaged something like, not counting, you know, Matt Ryan, I'm kind of eyeballing here, averaged about 3.4 yards per carry. You know, that's not acceptable in any at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's not acceptable. So it was just the sort of thing where it was enough to do damage. It's not something that if you try to do the entire season, if you did that the entire season, you'd be a below 500 team. But in this case, it worked for one game.
Yeah, and I also like in the playoffs too, the game really slows down. Possessions are longer. You're not running. Your offense kind of like just – you're not running on no huddle, even though the Titans didn't save their season. Carolina with no huddle and worked out pretty well. I just think the game's a lot slower whenever you have those turnovers, and the way it's designed, the biggest thing is just to not have a really big turnover and have that occur. And, you know, the Rams were close, you know, they were close, but they were never able to fully break it open. Yeah. I have two last questions for you on this game. So Jared Goff, is he good? And Sammy Watkins, is he good?
I think Jared Goff, he's better. So he no longer has Jeff Fisher ruining his career. So he's got that going for him, which is nice. I mean, the dude wound up with 100.5 QB rating for the season. A lot of that, yes, was due to the success of, you know, the screen game, but he still averaged 8 yards per attempt. I think he's gotten to the point where he is technically good, and he definitely improved greatly from year one to year two. I think the bigger question is can he build on year three? And as
mm-hmm.
we saw with, like, Blake Bortles, who improved greatly from 1 to 2 and really 2 to 3 even, he's got to just keep improving. So the year he put up this year, he had 28 TDs and 7 interceptions. He is a fine quarterback. He's good. I would love to have him on my team. So, yes, I do think he's good, but he could be better.
Mm-hmm.
Matt?
What about Sammy Watkins?
Wow. I think that one's trickier because you added a lot of weapons. You know, Robert Woods got a lot of the action this year for them, and Robert Woods has had a hard – I mean, I'm sorry, Sammy Watkins has had a hard time staying healthy. He hasn't had 1,000-yard season in his career. He's not the most efficient receiver by any standards at all. I at this point, I wouldn't call him a bust. I don't think he was worth the, 2014, I think he was the fourth pick. Yeah, he was the fourth pick that year. He wasn't worth that pick, but he's not bad. I think he's the sort of guy, though, who still has enough athletic ability that he can age well, and he can turn himself into kind of a Larry Fitzgerald kind of receiver. But at this point in time, he has not been what he needs to be. Is he good? Yeah, depends on your definition of good. Is he great? No. Was he worth that pick? Nah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for Goff, I think he had like a gabbertian rookie year. He had the second worst rookie season. I think he had the second worst rookie season of all time behind Blaine Gabbert. His DYAR was like -784. His DVOA was like -400 something. Name redacted had DVOA, I think, of like, -400 does not sound right. It was something just like astronomical, though. It may have been, I don't know, but it was astronomical how bad he was last year. And then you have better coaching, you have an offense that, is better suited for him. You create easy throws, you build his confidence back, and all that sort of thing. I wasn't really on the Rams going in next year. I thought they would probably be one of those teams that regresses some. Just it's hard to run an offense like they run and have it, work again the next year unless there's improvement there. And I thought, a lot of gossip fans, a lot of empty calories. But then he made some throws this game, and there were some really spectacular throws that he was making to try to get the Rams back in this one. And so just like based off four of those throws that he made in this one, where I was like, wow, who is that? I'm all in for Goff being a good quarterback, and I think he's going to improve a lot next year. I think him and McVay are going to be a great combination. It's going to be a lot of fun watch, what he can do with Goff. And this is also like in one offseason he's able to do with Goff. Add, more weapons, add another year, add more, time around the game, working with each other. And I think it's going to be one of the premier, quarterback coaching combinations in the league, actually. And I don't even know how much that's even going to be Goff itself, but, with McVay able to expand the game for Goff. I don't think Sammy Watkins is good, though. I think he's a bad receiver. I think he can't make any catches in contact. I think he has trouble with contact. I think he's only able to make a play whenever he gets wide open on a route. I think he's still a great route runner, but everything after the route he struggles with. And that pass that got through that was just spectacular, that fade down the sideline when they had one score game. That just goes right through his hands, I think, is a good example of that, where he can get open against guys, but it's everything after that he struggles with. And I just think he's too – I think he strives away from contact too much to be a good receiver in the league. And I think it's more his personality, and I don't really see him becoming anything more than a guy who you just keep giving opportunities to because he was a high first-round pick who will give you, like 600 receiving yards and four touchdowns.
I hadn't even considered that about Watkins. I think that's a fantastic point.
Yeah, I'm so mad about that pass went through his hands. I get really angry about some of these things. But yeah, that's all I have for that game. I wish you could play that game again without the Farrah Cooper turnovers. And Farrah Cooper is going to be a Pro Bowler whenever it comes to returning. He was great all year, and I don't think the Rams really had nerves, but I think Cooper did for sure. And that whole thing was really kind of frustrating because you just want to see a great game. And it almost got there, but it never fully boiled. The first game of Sunday was Bills-Jaguars. Now, I was wrong about this game as I was watching it because my thought while I'm sitting on the couch was that whoever throws the other team out of 8-man boxes and one safety looks is going to win this game. But it turns out neither team can make that happen, and each team just sat there running the ball against 8-man boxes. Did you enjoy this game?
This is like that really stupid set of commercials where you enjoy, it's like pouring hot coffee on yourself. That's
I like those commercials. Those are good. What's your favorite that commercial?
I want to kick them all in the nuts. Even the women, kick them all in the nuts. I hate those commercials.
I like the one where the guy's getting his seat kicked back on the airplane. That one makes me laugh.
God. No, that's what this game reminded me of. It was pure masochism to watch it. It was on one hand, I love watching great defenses. Callie Campbell had a really great game. this was a lot of fun to watch from that perspective. I also like a little offense in my games, and I also like to watch a little quarterback like that might be named Blake Bortles or Tygod Taylor, who can actually, you know, successfully throw the ball down the field to gain yards. Those are kind of fun things too. Taylor was freaking terrible this game. Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
So it was entertaining in a head-banging sort of way, Matt.
Yeah. So I've never thrown a football before. And so Blake Bortles, like, is it hard to throw a football in 5 miles per hour of wind?
God, no. If you have any sort, oh my goodness. When I saw that question, I died. If you throw a good ball, and so this is one of the things I've talked about a lot during the combine time especially, right, is everybody's looking at the size of the hand. And I will tell you that my right hand is 8 1/4 inches. I do not have a big right hand. My left hand's 9 1/4. I can't explain this, but that's a true story. So I 8 1/2 and 9 1/4 on the left. So I don't know what's going on. I should have been left-handed. But anyway, if you have any sort of pull down on the ball to get a spiral on it, a 5 mile per hour wind means absolutely nothing. I mean, it's like literally nothing. You should be cutting that ball through that sort of wind. This isn't even a thing, right? It's not a thing. And so for that to be a thing is just absolutely hilarious to me.
I just telecast, Rama brought it up because Bortles was just missing these open, like, 7-yard passes, and they weren't even close. It was like he was skipping rocks across a placid stream in Oregon or something. And he was like, yeah, you know, he needs to get the ball like this. And they showed the – and then I was like, how – he's like, but it is pretty windy here, Jim. And they showed, like, tracker of how windy it is there in 6 miles per hour, and I lost that. You know, you thought it was a mouse storm he was throwing in out there, but my theory of Blake Bortles, I think he's secretly left-handed and just hasn't realized it yet, and then once he figures out he needs to throw out the other hand, he'll be a lot better.
That sounds like the stuff I used to do when I was bowling, is I'd be bowling left-handed and people come up to see, hey, you want to bowl for money? I'd say sure, and I'd let them beat me. And then I'd be up there the next time. I go, oh, that's right, I'm right-handed. And I'd wipe them out. And I got into a lot of fights that way. And I don't recommend that as making a living. But, yeah, no, that was really funny hearing that stuff because it was just so stupid. I mean, look, if it's like 10 miles per hour and it's swirling, yeah, that'll start to mess with it. But if you throw any sort of ball that has if you're throwing any sort of tight spiral, which these guys should all be doing, they have decent mechanics. Of course, we're talking about Blake Bortles, so no. But there, you know, once you get up to 10, maybe that'll start messing with you, especially crossing patterns a little bit. If it's a crossing wind, and you have to say, okay, I need to throw it a little bit farther out. But still, when you're throwing a ball 20 yards down the field, and you're throwing about, 45 miles per hour, the difference on that ball, it's going to get there in about 2.9 seconds. So the difference on that ball is going to be more or less 4 inches, right? We're not talking about huge differences when it's a 10-mile-per-hour wind. So that to me was just hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really like he was just hanging out the beach, you know, on his 7th beer, just lazily throwing the ball with, you know, a buddy of his. And it was also weird watching a playoff football game in Jacksonville because it's bright and it's sunny and, you know, lovely after watching how cold it was in Kansas City. It was two entirely different places. So, the aesthetics of this game also. Now, the other thing about it kind of made me sad was that touchdown was scored, because I was hoping it was going to be a 6-3 game. Like, I didn't want to see any touchdowns. I could score at all. And the Bills almost stopped Jacksonville from scoring. Leonard Fournette dived over the pile. Lorenzo Alexander yanked him down by his ankles to pull down. And then they ran that play-action pass on fourth down, which is the only touchdown of the game. Now, Leonard Fournette had 57 yards rushing and 21 carries. What do you think is going on with that right now?
So the Buffalo is just stacking the box. I mean, they played out of their head. Lorenzo Alexander played out of his head. Preston Brown is not that good. He's not bad. Ramon Humber is not that good. You had a lot of guys really playing out of the heads that game. And that was the one thing that really stuck out at me. But Lorenzo Alexander, the dude was all over the field. It was like he tried to single-handedly win that game for Buffalo. they were just stacking the box. They were going to say, they went into that game saying, look, we're going to let Blake Bortles beat us. If he beats us, hey, what can we do? But we're not going to let, you know, Fournette beat us. And that was the game plan. That's what they went out and executed. It was, frankly, I thought it was a fantastic game called by the defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It was just funny because they both used the exact – like, both offenses moved the ball the same way. Both defenses played the same way. And I also understand, like, why neither team spied the quarterback at all. Like, Bortles ran for more yards than he threw, and that was what set their field goal attempt that they had. That's what set the touchdown that they had, too. So it's like, why don't you just have, you know, Alexander just sit there in the middle of the field and just spy Bortles the entire time? But they were pretty insistent on – you turn their backs and playing zone coverage and, you know, letting them run for 9, 12 yards over and over again. And so that whole thing was really strange, but, you know, we'll do the same thing too. And the one of the other things I want to mention was Sean McCoy was spectacular in this game with the bad ankle. He had, you know, 120 yards from scrimmage, and he played a lot better than I thought he was going to. I liked how the Bills, you know, rested and picked their spots with him. He had that one screen that he took, 40 yards that they lost 10 yards on because of a really weak holding penalty. And my holding is that if your hands are on the chest and you're driving and the defensive back, you know, it was AJ Boye, you know, kind of falls back as he's wrapped up on the chest, that shouldn't be holding because he's grabbing on the numbers. You can grab there. You just have to do a better job getting off the block. So I think that was, you know, a sad part of it too. I think things broke for the Jags about as well as they could in this one.
Yeah, the other big factor in here is that we have to really props to Nathan Peterman, who threw yet another interception. So the dude now has 52 attempts as a pro all overall with 6 interceptions. That is truly, truly elite.
I want to see what that comes out to.
That's like 1 out of 8.5.
It's an interception rate of 11.5%.
That is truly spectacular.
Yeah, like awful is 4%. That's pretty good though. I mean, I kind of felt bad for Peterman because that's an awful situation to go into. One where you're playing with the Bills offense that they have zero, you know, outside receivers at all. Benjamin's hurt. He also weighs 270 pounds. Jordan Matthews isn't out there. You have Zay Jones, who, you know, hasn't been good all this year. Charles Clay is your best receiver. And you're also going up against a great pass rush and the best pass defense in football. And it was just a no-win situation. And that Rams interception was spectacular, too, the way he tipped it to himself. And Boye almost did something similar as well, but he wasn't quite able to do it. And Ramsey's just a bit better. He's just a better athlete than Boye can make plays like that.
Yeah, you're not going to give any love at all to Logan Thomas? Wow, you're harsh.
I thought he was tied in, too.
I love Logan Thomas, as a quarterback. He's 1 for 9 with 1 completion. That one completion went for 81 yards in a touchdown.
That's what I was about to say. Was like that 70-whatever-yard touchdown he had in Arizona.
Yeah, it's
hilarious.
Because
I think he started a game there, too, and that was his entire box school before he got benched again.
Yeah.
Hey, he's living the dream, though. And the last game was Panthers-Saints, and we mentioned it earlier, but this was like a really spectacular quarterback duel. So, BFT, who'd you enjoy watching more of, the Saints or the Panthers? And which throw do you think is prettier, the Breeze back shoulder throw or the Cam Newton screamer across the defensive back?
I got to go with the Cam Newton throw because Cam Newton, there aren't many guys who can just flat out make that play. There are a lot of guys who can throw beautiful back shoulders. You know, Drew Breeze, Deshaun Watson, there are a lot of guys who can make that back shoulder throw. And it's not taking away from it either at all. But Cam Newton, man, when he throws one of his downfield balls that is just an absolute clothesline, it is a beautiful ball. You want to talk about a spiral that is cutting through the air and is getting from point A to point B with beautiful precision, that is that ball. So I have to admit, let's just be honest, it sexually arouses me to see that throw.
Yeah. If only they could put that into a little blue pill.
I don't need blue pills.
Yeah, we would never have to worry about that ever again. I don't know. Like, this one's hard. I think what the thing about Newton's throw is because it really reminds me a lot of like a bow and arrow, where just the arrow is just pulled all the way back because he comes all the way off his back foot. And then when he throws, it's just his arm. Like, it's just all coming off his back foot. And pretty much just all pure arm strength. And nobody has the mechanics that he has. And that's just that he has been spectacular. I think I'm going to say Breeze just because with watching behind you of him, he's so, you know, he's like 5'10 or however tall he is, or 6 foot. And he, like, cranes his neck over the line of scrimmage. And I don't think he can even see the entire picture for a lot of these throws he makes. But he just knows where that spot is, knows his guys well. And that throw of Michael Thomas, where Thomas has a defensive back turn, looks in the last second, and pretty much just leaps a foot in the other direction and makes that catch. Like, he just has such good chemistry with everybody. And, I mean, watching both these guys go back and forth is just spectacular.
Yeah, it's – and they're such different quarterbacks, too. I mean, Drew Brees is very much a classic pocket quarterback. He really relies on his accuracy. The guy is just crazy accurate. You know, that was a like leitmotif throughout the game, right? How accurate mm-hmm. he is. So, and then Cam Newton, he's more of the modern-day quarterback where he's mobile, but he's also got the really, really huge arm. So he's like Mike Vick, but like the, you know, fourth upgrade of Mike Vick. So two very different quarterbacks, but both are just a ton of fun to watch. And man, I do love me some Cam Newton. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing, I guess this game also reminded me of the Rams Falcons game away, because I think this game went about as bad as it could go for the Panthers the way it started. Not from them that, you know, they didn't have any turnovers at all, but they started the game with 5 red zone trips. They moved the ball in the Saints territory over and over again, and they only got 12 points out of it. Yet still, in spite of all of that, they were able to have a game-winning drive opportunity at the very end of it. And, you know, the weird thing about that part of it to me is that the reason why the Saints team is a Super Bowl contender and why they're in the playoffs right now is because they can run the ball and play defense. And against the Panthers, they struggle to run the ball and play defense. So are you worried at all about their Super Bowl prospects at all? Or was it just kind of one bad game that their run game and defense had?
I think that the Panthers have some really good run-stopping ability. Whether you look at Kawan Short, Star Lotulelei, Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, Shaq Thompson, this is a really good defense when broken down into its main components. So I don't really think that it was as much the Saints failing as it was the matchup, the Panthers being the matchup. That mm-hmm. said, I have not seen an update on Andrus Peat.
Broke his leg. Yeah, he broke his left.
Oh, he broke his leg. Oh, crikey. Yeah. Well, that's going to be a major. Anybody who comes in for Andrus Peat is going to be a major downgrade. So it could be problems for the Saints running the ball. I didn't realize that was the injury. Dang.
Mm-hmm. And they even struggled throwing the ball to Kamara and Ingram this game. Kamara Ingram had trouble, you know, running, and the Panthers have great linebackers, and that's kind of, I mean, the way their defense works is it's just 3 levels of it, and it's been like that since, you know, 2014, where you have a front four that gets pressure, you have linebackers that are fast and can cover a huge part of the field, and so that way, whenever you run 5 defensive backs in coverage, they don't have to be as good because they have to cover less amount of space because of how good your linebackers are. And I think Kuechly and Thomas had great games, but Kuechly kind of got lost pass here and there where guys are able to get behind him and he was drawn back in zone coverage and kind of changed this game a little bit as well too. But I think that's a good answer. I think it's more about the Panthers run defense than, you know, the Saints. And, you know, Newton's really good, and we saw how good Newton was too with his receiving corps, where he has Greg Olsen, he has Clay, who dropped that touchdown pass, he has Funches, only has one shoulder that works, he had Buxton, who fell down, you know, running with the football, and they don't really have anybody after that. And so, I mean, you know, the effort that Newton had in this game was just spectacular. And, you know, he was close, and he's one of the, you know, best quarterbacks in football. And I think kind of people kind of forget about that too sometimes, the thing about Carolina.
Yeah, that Burson turf monster trip up, man, that would have been a big play. And if that's who you're throwing to, I mean, Russell Shepard was worthless out there. But, yeah, Funches, God, man, that looked like me. And Christian McCaffrey, the only reason he had a decent game receiving was that one long touchdown.
That one big catch.
Yeah. The trade, I still don't understand the Kelvin Benjamin trade. I don't know. So it seemed like he would have been real helpful out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. And I don't think Benjamin's all that great, but for sure he would have been helpful in this one. And also Newton and him, you know, worked together pretty well. And that was kind of one of the weirdest trades this year. The other thing I found interesting about this game was on the Panthers' perspective, they couldn't get a rush off their front four. And then the second half, they started blitzing on third down and really started getting after Breeze. And that's when they started the punts. They were able to kind of claw their way back into this one. And, yeah, that pun was intended. And you don't really see the Panthers blitz at all. And you also don't see them struggle to get a pass rush in their front four. And so that whole kind of change was interesting, too. So, like, I mean, it was just such a fun game watching these two quarterbacks kind of go back and forth. And when one kind of dropped, the other one picked back up. And the Panthers still had a chance to come back and win it. And why don't defensive backs just knock the ball down? Because the Panthers did lose. They only started the ball at their own 47. Instead, they started the ball at their own 31. They lost 16 yards of position because Mike Adams had intercepted that pass, which should have been reviewed also. But, yeah, why don't defensive backs just knock that pass away?
It's situational awareness, but it's also instinct, right? Look, that's a mistake I've made, not playing professional football stuff, but just I remember, I play football, So it's just a mistake because it's purely instinct. You see the ball, you want to catch the ball. That's what you want to do. Even you see the same thing from wide receivers and running backs when they're catching the ball 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and they know they're going to get their worlds rocked, but it's instinct to catch the ball. I'm supposed to catch that thing. I'm not supposed to knock it down. And so I think that is a part of football that could be improved upon if you're, kind of looking at the next level kind of statistics kind of thing. But still, man, if I see a football coming my way, I want to catch it. I'm not really thinking, oh, am I going to lose 4 yards? I'm thinking, ball, catch.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I've never seen defensive back, like, not intercept the pass for Glover Quinn in 2010. My last question for this game is, what did you think about Sean Payton's decision to go for him? Yeah, I forgot it was 4th and 2. They had the ball at the 47 on Carolina 47-yard line. The Panthers had 0 timeouts. There was 1:57 left in the game. And rather than punt and try to pin Carolina deep, they went for it, and Breeze got blocked and interception to Adams. But what did you think? Did you like the call for – did you like Payton to go over the throat slit on that one?
I'm really mixed because I like the aggressive nature of that call. And you're gambling on that your defense, which has been playing pretty darn well, is going to be able to hold up against the Panthers on that. I don't know if I would have done that. That was a little bit even aggressive for me, someone who has a tendency to want to be more aggressive. I don't fault them for it, though, because you just end the game. There is something I really like about controlling your own destiny. And I think that's one of those cases where you control your own destiny by saying, hey, look, it's 4th and 2. I'm going to go for it now. And I think the play call sucked. But I don't have a problem with it, but it was maybe a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think going that traditional drop back, just because they were struggling to drop back at that point in the game with the pass rush and the blitz that Carolina had, and it kind of rocked again too. Is there anything else that you want to add about these four games this past weekend?
No.
Yeah, I had a lot in my heart that I needed to get out. Thank you. I'm laying on a leather couch with looking up at the ceiling.
Kinky.
So we have a little bit of time here left. We're not going to entirely preview these games. Again, it's only Tuesday night. I've done enough look into it. I don't want to give you false information or anything like that. So we'll make our preliminary picks and I guess kind of talk about what we're interested in the last part of the show. So the first game this weekend is going to be Atlanta against Philadelphia. The Falcons are road favorites as the number 6 seed going to the number 1 seed, and they're 3-point favorites. Who do you have in this one?
I've got Atlanta. The Eagles are a great team, but without Carson Wentz, I think they're just a shell offensively. So I'm going to go with the Falcons.
Yeah, I'm going to say Philly just because I don't think Atlanta showed enough that last game. If they play like how they did last week, this week, it's a defensive run the ball sort of grind. I think the Eagles are going to beat them. That game kind of goes like how, like, I think this game could kind of be like how a better version of Buffalo Jacksonville, if Atlanta plays like how they did last week. And I think the Eagles will beat the situation.
Wow, interesting. Okay.
The next game we have is Saturday night. We have Tennessee going to England. I guess the line here, guess how high it is.
Well, you've got it on there, on our write-up.
Damn
it. Seems like you're kind of cheating.
Yeah, the 13.5-point favorites in this one.
Yeah, and I think that's about 25 points too low.
That's how I feel, too.
I think this is going to be what was it, 57-0 a few years ago? 2008, when the Patriots won in the snow, 57-0. So I'm going to go with the Patriots easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I think the only way if it's a less than 14-point game, it's because Tennessee runs the ball against Patriots defense isn't really playing at all anymore. The smoke's clear. Nothing's going on. But I do think the Patriots want to run the score up. I think they're angry after that ESPN article, so then they're going to come in and try to pour it up on Tennessee.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. And not only that would be so Belichick, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of that 2012 Texans game where they're going in and you're like, there really isn't any hope at all. And you just kind of know that they're going to lose, but it's kind of a question of how much.
Yeah, pretty much.
Maybe DeVere Pettis is going to touch down pass with 2 minutes left or something and makes it seem close to it really is.
I just hope that, oh, God, never mind. That was too mean. Let's just move on.
The Sunday 12 o'clock game is Jacksonville going to Pittsburgh. The line is Pittsburgh are favorites. So who do you have in this one?
I'm going to take Jacksonville. Not only am I going to take Jacksonville to cover, I'm going to take them to win. I'm going to take them to win in a 14-9 ugly, nasty game because I think they can shut Antonio Brown down, especially with him hurt. And I don't know his status right now either. But I'm going to look that one up. Yes, I'm going to nerd out. The full participant. Okay, so he's going to play. I'm going to take him. I'm still going to take Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going Pittsburgh. I think it's going to be like a 150, 175-yard Le'Veon Bell rushing game. I don't think they're going to have to really throw the ball at all to beat Jacksonville. And I also think Bortles makes mistakes. And as bad as Bortles was in sunny Florida, he's going up to – the cold in Pittsburgh and going up against a good defense that's still rushing some. And then they also, they love to blitz defensive backs and confuse quarterbacks. And so I don't like Bortles going to Pittsburgh. And I think he's really good. I think Jacksonville's going to lose because of the defense and they're going to lose because of their offense. And I think Bell runs for like 175 yards and Roethlisberger has like a game managing, 200 or something like that.
Yeah, I'm mostly going with Jacksonville just because excuse me. Just because, Blake Bortles is so freaking erratic, I can see him having a big game and just, blowing everybody away. So
yeah,
I'm pulling this fully out of him.
I want, Jacksonville to win. I don't want salt or pepper in the AFC title. I want salt versus, some good old Creole. I don't know what it really is. Time. I want to see something different in the AFC title game. I'm tired of the team, and Jacksonville's pass defense is good enough to mash against New England and Pittsburgh, but so many things have to go the right way for them. But I think this game is going to be a good one. I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
And the last game, I think this is the best game this weekend. It's New Orleans going to Minnesota, and the Vikings are 4-point favorites.
This one for me is easy. It's New Orleans. I really think this is the weekend that Case Keenum turns back into a pumpkin.
Yeah, I have the Saints too, and I think Keenum is underrated by, he's had such a great year. He's been awesome this year, and I don't think that should be taken away, but he has thrown a lot of passes that should have been picked off that, weren't. And I don't know, I think it's my favorite thing about this year. I'm so happy for the Keenum truthers who say Keenum's great all this time for him to actually have a great year. It's been beautiful. And I'm really happy that Keenum's had a great season. But I just think the Saints are just a better football team from, offense. Offensively, and they have the defense and run game, too, to beat Minnesota as well.
Yeah, yes. And I also think that Case Keenum really still is not a very good quarterback. I don't know. Yes, he was fine this year. Yes, you're not going to replace him. You're not going to put in Teddy Bridgewater to replace him. You're just not going to do that.
They wanted to, but they couldn't. It was funny.
Yeah, they really kind of couldn't. So it's just he's still not a good quarterback. He had a fine season. He put up a 98.3 QB rating. His entire season screams outlier in every possible way. So, and if you look toward the end of the season, starting against Cleveland, his numbers drop off dramatically. So I just really expect Case Keenum to do a full face flop in this game.
Yeah, he's also one of those guys, too, that has a really high touchdown rate, too, compared to what he's ever had before. And it's going to be mean to say, but Deshaun Watson's the same way, too, where he has a touchdown rate that's way too high. And a lot of quarterbacks that do that, Nick Foles is a great example, drop off the following year. So we'll see what happens. The Vikings offensive coordinator, Pat Schumer, if he becomes the head coach, Case Keenum with their package deal.
God, if you're the team that hires Pat Shermer, I hope not. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Case Keenum is, 29 this year, 28 this year? Where is he? So, he's not young. He's not going to get better. You can't really expect him to get better. He's 29. That's right. So next year will be his age 30 season. So if you expect Case Keenum to go out and do what he's going to do for another season with the fluky, it's just like Andrew Siciliano says during the Sunday Ticket broadcast, Keenum with another hot air balloon down the field. I mean, this is a guy who gets lucky more than he's good. It's just sometimes you fluke. Hey, sometimes the knuckleballer throws a shutout. It's just happening.
Hey, he does throw a pretty nice deep ball, even going back to his time in Houston. Remember that Kansas City game he first started where he hit Hopkins, and that beautiful game with Andre Johnson against the Colts where they ended up blowing in the second half? Yeah, he can put downfield a little bit.
He can, yeah. It's the other balls he can't throw.
Yeah. Nah, regardless, I am happy about what he was able to do this year. It was a lot of fun. And it's incredible that he's going to be playing a home playoff game this weekend.
Yeah.
I really can't believe it.
It's good. That'll be a fun game to watch, and I just can't wait to see the face plant.
Yeah, and I put a $50 bet on the Saints in the Super Bowl, and they were 7-1 odds. And so I'm hoping to get revenge on that. Yeah, just entering the playoffs, and I have 15-1 odds on the Falcons from the Super Bowl last year, week 8, I picked them, and it would have paid out $300. So I doubled down on it, and then of course the 2018 happened. So I hate gambling. I never want to do it again. But I got roped in a little bit because I really am. I've been in on the Saints since on week 8 this year. I saw they could run the ball and play defense, but I'm really excited for this game though. And I think I'm going to Big Ben this weekend too. So I'm probably gonna have to watch them all recorded on MLK Day on Monday. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah.
Wow, you can't even see, wow. Okay. See, I don't gamble, so.
Yeah. Well, I'll come home and see if I made $50 or not, So, anyways, we don't have any viewer questions all night, which is fine. Thank you, everybody, for listening live. Thank you for listening record as well, too. I hope you enjoyed these games past weekend. I hope you enjoy the games this weekend because football is great. Texas is going to be playing for you to enjoy the game at all. Thank you for being on tonight, BFD, as well. We'll be back on live next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central, where we will review the divisional round, and maybe the Texans have a GM by that point. Who knows? But anyways, again, my name is Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Battle Red Radio, and thank you for being on tonight, BFD.
Hello.
Good to me. thought it was pretty good.